In this video, I just want to go through the text Usulu Shashi with you very briefly, or about the text rather, with you. So if you look at other texts which are written on the similar theme of Usul, for example, Fakhrul Islam, Bazdawi, Shamsul A'imma, As-Sarakhshi, Abu Bakr al-Jassas, Ad-Dabusi, for example, and you compare books written by these Hanafi scholars of Usul, or these Hanafi scholars more generically, you'll find that the text here, the Usul al-Shashi, reflects a more mature understanding of the Hanafi Usul genre. And if you do a detailed analytical reading of Usul al-Shashi, what it reveals is that the work could not have been written before Al-Bazdawi, who was in the late 5th century, right, of Islam, because the work actually follows his terminology and his arrangement. And a good resource, if you want to read more, is this paper here, The Problem of Usul al-Shashi, where you can read more on this particular question of when the Usul al-Shashi was actually written. But I'm not going to go into that because that's beyond the remit of what I want to discuss in this video. So for example, just to give you one example, early Hanafi scholars didn't discuss the end position, which is called the ghaya of a preposition, right? Of the preposition illa, right? And you'll find that this actually takes place more often in discussions following Bazdawi, right? And you'll find this discussion in Usul Shashi. So it reflects, Usul Shashi is a much more mature understanding of the Usul genre within the Hanafi school. Let me give you an example. If you take the example of the imperative, which we call Amr, Amr in Arabic, there's a question, is that when an order or when an Amr is given, or you find an imperative in the text, Quran and Sunnah, then does this mean that you're only meant to do it once? Or does it mean that it accommodates this idea of repetition, takrar, right? And so this is a question, for example, that the Usulis follow, right? Whether the imperative Amr accommodates repetition or not is found in Usul al-Shashi, because this is more of a mature discussion. For example, when God says, Allah says in the Quran, wa aqimu salata, perform the prayer, the aqimu is an amr, is an order from God. Does it mean you have to perform the prayer once and you fulfill the obligation? So as long as you pray the perform, you perform the prayer once in your entire life, then you've fulfilled the command? Or does it mean repetition, i.e. every time the prayer time comes, you have to repeat the prayer? Okay, and this discussion is a linguistic discussion, but actually it becomes important later on as a school in its usul begins to mature. Okay, so this causes, this particular example I'm taking here, the imperative, it actually causes, creates a tension, right, between its remit to give a single specific command or a universal nature of a religious legal obligation. So I give you the example of performing the prayer. Wa aqimu salata or wa atu zakata. Perform the prayer, give the zakat. So does it mean that a person has to perform the prayer only once? And if they've performed the prayer once, the salah in their entire life, it's done? Or does it mean that it's more of a universal nature, right? That every time the time of prayer comes, you perform it, right? Zakat, giving charity. Does it mean that you give charity once and you've given the zakat and you fulfill the divine command? Or does it mean that every time the anniversary comes for zakah, a person needs to give that as well? So this is like, it seems obvious to us today, because we're used to it. But if you think about it from a linguistic perspective, this is very, very important. So they have this discussion. But the point is that you see these discussions are much more mature discussions in the Hanafi school as well. Okay, so for example, just for your information, Al-Jassas, who's a famous scholar in Hanafi school, he says that, for example, that he's an early scholar. He actually says that the command is repetition, whereas Bazdawi, Saraqsi, Dabusi reject this position. Okay, and so the ulama discuss this later on, and they actually discuss this as an independent topic. It becomes an independent, mature topic in of itself, right? They discuss it under a general noun. So the amr is seen as a general noun. Now, a general noun, as you know, by its nature, it means a single event, but it can also mean the maximum for that. For example, if you say the word food, which is a noun, ism, it may refer to a single morsel of food, right? Bring food. Or it might refer to the entire generic category of food. And this is where you have to sort of know a little bit about logic, and you have to know a little bit about balagha, rhetoric as well. This is why, by the way, people who engage in this science without a firm grasp of mantiq, logic and rhetoric, these sciences will make into a disaster when they study fiqh, when they comment about fiqh without understanding these sciences. Okay, and so the example of food, right? When someone says food, does it mean the generic category of food, or does it mean just food in a single sense? So let me give an example that the Hanafi scholars actually talk about, and I'm just trying to use this as an example to prove that the Usul al-Shafi'i text, it reflects a much more mature understanding. And I'm using a particular example of the imperative phrase, the amr, right? When you give an order. So you'll find in the books of fiqh discussions around the wife's limit, the wife's agency in the case of divorce. And there's a special type of divorce called talaqi tafwid, this one here. Talaqi tafwid. And basically, all it is that it's permission to divorce being delegated, the permission being delegated to the wife, so that the wife can divorce herself. So when a husband says to the wife, and the husband basically delegates this, so normally it's a husband's right, the husband will say to the wife that I divorce you, but sometimes he can actually delegate that authority to his wife, and the wife can do it. So the wife can say, so for example, the husband might say to the wife, talliqi nafsaki, divorce yourself, right? So she's got the right to divorce herself because he's given her the authority to do that. He's given the tafweez, he's passed that authority, he's delegated the authority to his wife. Now, this is an imperative, right? Like, he's giving, divorce yourself. It's an amr. Now, the question here, just to go through this example and to prove that the Usul al-Shafi'i is a mature understanding of the Hanafi Usul, is how many times can a wife implement a divorce on herself, right? Now, the Hanafi jurists acknowledge that this phrase is a form of imperative, it's an amr. So then the question is, does it apply once or can it be repeated? Now, generally, they understand that the question is, can she be divorced once, or is it the maximum number of times, which is 3 times? So is it repetitive, right? So because she's used an imperative, she's only allowed to divorce herself once, right? And they say the imperative is here once. However, what they do is they add to say that when you give an imperative, when you say something in imperative form, it's once, but it also includes the general understanding of that noun. So hence, in this case, the permission to divorce in this case may include the maximum number of divorces, 3. So he might say to her, divorce yourself, and they would say, well, she's only been divorced once, but there's a possibility, because the maximum number you can give a divorce is 3 times. So there's a possibility that she may be entitled to the 3, pronouncements, if you like, as well. However, what they say, and they go into some detail here, is that this can only happen if when the husband gave her the authority, when he delegated the authority, he expressed his intention that when I give you this authority to divorce yourself, I mean once or I mean three times, right? Because he's it's no longer ambiguous, right? There's no ambiguity, and Hanafi scholars are very keen on trying to avoid ambiguity, because their school is very much built on epistemology and certainty. Okay, and so Usul Shashi and Imam, you'll find this in his book, that he actually, this is how he introduces this idea that when an amr is made, when an order is given, it accommodates repetition. It can accommodate repetition. Okay. So this proves that basically that Usul al-Shashi was a very much a later development of Usul in the Hanafi school. I've given you quite a lengthy example here, quite a detailed example, but just to prove that the book is basically written at a mature stage as well. And just as a second point, Usul al-Shashi it's used within the madrasa syllabus, in the Darsul Nizami syllabus, in particular in South Asian seminaries or Darul Ulums, and also in the UK here and other places as well. Okay, despite the fact that we know very little about the author himself, it's very much highly esteemed, and it has some very interesting discussions, and it's very, very comprehensive, Jami. It's very, very comprehensive. And it focuses on the four primary sources of Islam, the Quran, the Sunnah, the Ijma, and the Qiyas, right? It focuses on these four primary sources within the Sharia, within Islam as well. Now, sometimes these three discussions are like really pedantic and they're really like detailed. And sometimes students can find it overwhelming, right? Especially if you haven't studied Balagha, Ilmul Balagha, which is rhetoric, or you haven't studied Ilmul Bayan, for example, okay? And so these books can be difficult, but my hope is, my ambition is, inshallah, that together we can go through this book, because it's very, very important in showing you the richness and the depth of, in particular, the Hanafi school. I'll stop there. Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.